SBS Radio broadcasting in Tamil.
SBS வானொலியின் தமிழ் ஒலிபரப்பு.
Greetings, Shankari.
Hello, Sanjay, and thank you very much for having me today.
Congratulations on your book titled Song of the Sun God. May I ask who you had in mind when you wrote that book?
That's a good question. Initially, I had in mind my parents, my grandparents, and my community. I've grown up surrounded by a loving and very talkative extended family who have generously over the years shared their experiences and their memories and their politics with me. And when I first began to write this novel, I began it as a record of our communal history and our communal memories. But as the novel evolved, I found myself increasingly writing it as a gift to my children, as a love letter to them, so that they would have something to remind them of the ancient world they came from as they become increasingly integrated into the masala of the modern world.
You're not an author by training. Can you give us a bit of your background?
I've heard it said that most writers are not actually writers. They are something else during the day and they write by night. And that's certainly true of me. I am a lawyer by training and by trade. I worked for 10 years in the social justice field for an international corporate law firm, which I appreciate is a contradiction in terms, international corporate law firm and social justice. However, the two do go together in that my job was to work with the 30 plus offices we had around the world and find ways of identifying the needs of those communities and vulnerable people in those communities and to match our skills and resources with those needs.
So where did the writing come from?
The writing came from the very beginning. I've been an avid reader. I'm quite introverted and often prefer the company of myself and a good book. And I found that I was also an avid journaler. I kept a diary in my childhood and wrote short creative writing pieces as I got older, but never had the confidence to commit either to a degree in creative writing or a career, let alone a career in writing. And then when we returned from London to Australia, I had my fourth child. And it seemed not sensible to return to work immediately upon the birth of that fourth child. And so whilst I was on an extended maternity leave period, I took the opportunity to try to fulfill that lifelong dream of writing a book.
You mentioned children earlier also. Where do you find the time to write?
Well, I was fortunate enough, thanks to the state of Australia, that my fourth child was finally required by law to enter education. He left home a couple of years ago just to go to primary school. So I write furiously from 9:15 to 2:40 every day, as my husband says, with the discipline and dedication that I applied to my life as a lawyer. And then I down tools at 2:45 and begin a whole different kind of job, running around after them like every parent.
You thank him in the book that you have published earlier this year. Is he a supporter or a critic or both?
I must have married the only non-reader I've ever met, actually. He doesn't read fiction. He's a very wide, discerning reader of non-fiction. And so he often is incredibly useful for me in my research because he is able to explain the world and to put modern day politics in its historic context for me. So I use him as a sort of RSS news feed. He is incredibly supportive of my writing. He recognizes this is something that I've wanted to do for as long as he's known me. And with the first book in particular, he very beautifully recently said to me that he felt that although I had done the hard work on this novel, he felt that it was the contribution that our entire family had made to our community, to our people, and it was our way of honouring what had happened in Sri Lanka collectively.
Shankari, I should admit that it took me more than 3 months to read the book, mainly because the events that you have narrated took me back places and time that I either wanted to move on from, or there were instances where I fondly recollected the time I had with my grandmother. How could you bring those emotions and events that are very particular to a time and society that I doubt that you have either shared or lived or experienced. How could you bring that so beautifully?
Thank you for saying that. It is certainly something that I worried about when I released this novel. Would it resonate with Tamil people from Sri Lanka? Would it resonate with Sri Lankans? Would they identify with it, and would it feel authentic to them? Or would I be cast as an outsider who had no real standing to comment on, let alone try to create a novel out of their experiences and their lives? I think and I hope that I am a good listener. I spend a lot of time and have from childhood with people, and I hope that I listen to what they say to me. And I've paid a lot of attention to the stories of my parents, my grandparents, my aunties and uncles, their stories, their memories. And these memories are very vivid. They're very beautiful and often very harrowing. And there's a lot of very conflicted emotions in the stories that they tell me and the way that they tell them. So a lot of anger at what happened to the Tamil people, that sense of injustice and impotent rage, not knowing what to do with that feeling. But also really fond memories. And it's almost like they have recreated for me throughout my childhood and my adulthood their world. And it's in many ways, it's their attempt to hold on to their past through the telling of those stories to me, and my attempt through writing this to create a permanent record of that for them and for my own children.
This is SBS Tamil, broadcasting throughout Australia. We are talking to Shankari Chandran, lawyer turned author, who had recently published a book titled Song of the Sun God.
I mentioned it took 3.5 months for me to read the book. How long did it take for you to write the book?
It took me in total, from the time I began writing this novel to the time I was ready to let it go, it took me 2.5 years. So the first draft that I wrote, I somewhat arrogantly believed was done and ready, and I had a lot to learn with that first draft about what real writing is and what real storytelling is. And so that first draft was then rewritten another easily 25 times. The process also, as well as learning to write, because as you earlier pointed out, I'm not a writer.
I beg to differ. I mentioned that you're not a trained writer, but you're a beautiful writer.
Thank you very much. I was training myself as I was going, and I think I'm very grateful to my parents, actually, for giving me an openness to learning. My parents are very good learners, and I hope that my brother and I have absorbed some of that. So it was a continuous process of learning how to write and being prepared to improve myself and challenge my writing and put it out there for criticism, and then be prepared to listen to that and rewrite. I also had done a lot of research through the years, both in my law degree. I'd looked at the Sri Lankan conflict from a human rights perspective. I had studied on an exchange to McGill University in Montreal, where I had studied South Asian politics from a political science perspective and the construction of identity, ethnic identity, using religious rhetoric to create and divide ethnicity. So I had been accumulating knowledge over the years. And in my career as a lawyer in the social justice field, I had also encountered great human rights activists. I had read a lot about the conflict from that perspective of human rights law. And again, looking at witness statements and testimony of people who had been subjected to terrible things. And I took all of that and then continued to study as I was writing, which I think both adds time to the deadline, but I hope creates authenticity and fullness and as much accuracy as I could bring to it.
I'm going to read from Song of the Sun God. Which box are we? Nala whispered to Rajan as he studied the form. The census taker was watching both of them as they argued in Tamil. Which box are you?
That particular section came about for two reasons. One is that throughout my childhood, and more so actually in my angst-ridden teenage years, I had really struggled to work out who I was. Which box did I fit? Was I Australian? Which really meant at that time in the 80s and 90s in Australia, that actually meant white Australian. Was I Australian or was I Sri Lankan Tamil? and what did either of those identities mean? And I felt like I came from two worlds. I was socializing, and by day I was in the Australian environment, and by night and on the weekends I was in the Sri Lankan environment. And both of those lives and lifestyles were different from each other, and at times were opposed to each other. And I, as someone that is perhaps overly introspective and also obsessed with words, I was always trying to define who I am or was. The other reason that that section came about was because when we moved to London, or when I moved to London to be with my husband for 10 years, it was fascinating to see the British South Asian identity. It was not marginalized. It was not an extra bit. It was not a minority. It was part of the mainstream culture. And certainly within London, and even in some of the cities around England where there are very large South Asian populations, that identity is really embedded into mainstream culture. South Asians feature in a very high profile way, for example, as journalists, politicians, writers. Everyone from Zadie Smith to Salman Rushdie is South Asian and proud of it. And the British culture was proud of its South Asian component. And then we moved to Australia. And this was the first time I lived in Australia as an adult, because I left when I was 24 and I returned when I was 34, 35 years old. I now had children in tow. So I had an investment in their national identity. And I was really quite alienated when we came here and struggled to understand, you know, why are ethnic groups within Australia so geographically ghettoized? Why is the presence of multiculturalism confined to SBS and ABC in the public space and not in the mainstream media, not in mainstream television? And so all of these things were going through my mind in the writing of that section. The short answer to your initial question is that I consider myself to be an Australian of Sri Lankan Tamil ancestry.
You do give SBS a lot of compliment in this book. At least twice you have referred to SBS as a
Excellent.
Media of multi-ethnicity and culture.
Go SBS.
I have a habit of imagining what a person would be in person from their writing or Facebook image or whatever. This book spans three generations, or maybe four, if you consider Smriti's children as well. Do you identify yourself a lot with Smriti? Which generation would you...
Who am I in the novel?
In the novel, yes.
In an entirely fictional novel, who am I? I identify with Smriti, absolutely. I respect and admire... Well, I respect and admire all of them. I share some of Dara's passion for the Tamil people, although obviously not her willingness to sacrifice what she's prepared to sacrifice. But I identify the most with Smriti.
In the copyright page, you say, Song of the Sun God by Shankari Chandran is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places and incidents, especially those of historical persons and or events, either are the product of the author's imagination or are used fictionally. But I find that is a fiction.
It is indeed. That is a standard lawyer's disclaimer that you'll see at the front of every book. Certainly, I've tried to be as historically accurate as I could be. And I take absolute sort of responsibility where there are errors, they were unintentional, because it's a very long timeline to manage in a novel. I also understand and recognize that it's written from a very Tamil perspective. It's written through a Tamil lens, from a Tamil perspective. And I defend my right to use that perspective, to use that lens, because we each come to every situation with our own lens, and even the objective is seen through the subjective. In Sri Lanka, in both literature and in politics and in the public discourse, what's put forward as the Sri Lankan opinion is often the Sinhalese opinion or the Sinhalese perspective and narrative. And specifically within the field of literature, there are some and they're beautiful, but there aren't many Tamil voices or Tamil narratives. And so whilst I tried hard to remain objective and to present a historically accurate, full-bodied rendition of what had happened with multiple perspectives, I did also allow myself the license to use the lens with which I was born.
SBS Radio, broadcasting in Tamil.
எஸ்பிஎஸ் வானொலிக்கின் தமிழ் ஒலிபரப்பு.